Case number 12-5374, Ella Ward, appellant versus Eric K. Shinseki, Secretary, U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. Ms. Kahn for the appellant, Mr. Schwabe for the appellee.
Ms. Kahn, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. I prepared a brief. I think what I've said is very clear. I'd be happy to take any questions that the court could have.
Sure, we have some. I guess we
let me see if I can open it up.
Okay.
U.S. Airways versus Barnett set out the standard for a plaintiff to demonstrate in order to defeat a motion for summary judgment in a failure to accommodate claim. All the plaintiff has to show is that the accommodation she sought was reasonable in the run of cases. My client did that. The VA had an established procedure of work at home. Not only that, it had an established procedure for allowing disabled employees to work at home.
Does your client still want this? Does your client still want this option? I mean, they offered it in August of 2007.
I disagree.
There's a let's just give me a second. Okay, they offered to try work at home full time in August 2007. There was a timing issue. Put that aside. They offered it. That seemed to be, they seemed to be offering, at least on a trial basis, exactly what you had asked, your client had asked for. Does your client want it?
My client did not request to work at home on a trial basis. She
requested
to work at home.
I think you'll have to concede, though, that the policy, the written policy that the Bureau of Veteran Affairs has for telework permits them to start with a trial basis.
For telework, not as necessarily as an accommodation.
Telework is a form of accommodation, again, pursuant to that policy.
It
and again,
is.
Why, if it's a trial period, that seems, does your client want it? Yes or does it still, this is a yes or no question. Does your client still want to work at home full time or no longer? Is that no longer an
issue?
Honestly,
Your Honor, I cannot answer that question. I've not ever asked my client whether she still wants to work at home. I think the court is well aware that Ms. Ward was granted disability retirement. But to go back to your question, I disagree with the fundamental premise that the nature of an accommodation under the Rehabilitation Act is to permit any sort of accommodation on a trial basis. That
I thought, certainly, is not the intent.
I thought
you'd have a better answer. There's a better answer, isn't there? There's a better answer, isn't there?
What's the better answer?
The better answer is that, as I recall, that letter in August said we're willing to consider having you work at home on a trial basis. It didn't say we will let you. It just said we'll consider it. Well, of course, they've been considering that for months.
I agree, and that's what I wrote in my brief. But I was trying to answer Judge Millett's question on trying to do it at a on a trial basis and whether my client wanted it. That's really not the question here. The word approval appeared nowhere in the letter. And even if the court below read the word approval into a letter that is clear, definite, and specific. Not only that, they gave her a certain time and a manner in which to respond, which had already expired by the time she received it.
When, in your view, did they deny her request for accommodation?
It was denied on May 31st, at the May 31st meeting, where she was told, your request is denied. You will work at home part-time, which is what we have approved for you, or you will come to the office and work full-time or be disciplined if you don't.
Or you'll go, you'll give us more information. And my recollection is your client testified, or not testified, but stated at her deposition, we'll put your need for additional information in writing. Is that correct?
She asked them to put it in writing. She never agreed to provide this information that they requested on June 5th. Specifically, the information they requested was, tell us how long you can sit at a desk.
No, I'm aware of that. Imagine they had on, you had this on May 31st, and it wasn't the most hospitable meeting. But then on June 5th, they'd come out with a letter, and it actually requested perfectly legitimate additional piece of information. Please, can you just have your doctor confirm that full-time work on the terms you propose, you're capable of full-time work on the terms you propose whether at home or in the office. So perfectly legitimate inquiry for these purposes.
I disagree. Sitting at a desk for prolonged periods is not an essential function of the job.
I didn't say that. I said that my hypothetical is all the June 5th letter says is have your doctor confirm that working full-time, I did not say sitting full-time, working full-time is something your client can do, whether at home or in the office.
If that's what the...
Couldn't that have happened? I mean, until we knew, saw the June 5th letter, did we really know whether this was off? Whether there was going to be any possibility of further discussion?
It was already denied, Your Honor, on May 31st. And after they denied it, they told her doctor had to prove that she could work at home. That's where the June 5th letter came in. They essentially were offering Ms. Ward a quid pro quo. Take the part-time in exchange to work at home. That's why we claim that that's the violation of the Rehabilitation Act. They never asked her, tell your doctor to tell us whether you can work full-time. And even if they did, the inquiry should have been, Ms. Ward, do you believe you can work full-time at home? That's the interactive process. She was a full-time employee. This whole issue of full-time versus part-time only came into the picture based on their speculation that she could not work full-time.
Did we even need an interactive process in this case, given that they already had the FlexiPlace program?
No.
Okay.
They already had medical documentation as well that, of her disability going back to 2005.
I don't think anyone disputes the disability. So, right. So then there's no dispute about the disability, and they had an existing program.
What's the problem? Why not let her go home and work? I think that the real problem in this case and the violation of the Rehabilitation Act occurred when Mr. Cohn and Mr. Kramer had already determined, okay, you can work at home. We've determined you can work at home, but you're not going to do it in your current status. That's a quid pro quo. That's facially illegal. You cannot make the condition of granting an accommodation based on what I call an adverse employment action, a substantial reduction in the terms and conditions of an employee's full-time status.
When she was working, there was a period of time when she was working part-time at home. Does the record show there was a period of time when she was working part-time at home?
No, she worked part-time at the office for a few months in 2006.
Okay. It wasn't at home at all? Okay. All right. But anyhow, when she was working part-time, do we know about how many hours? Was that a 32 hours or 16 hours? We don't know.
It fluctuated depending on the amount of FMLA time that she needed to take. And the reason for the part-time was because she was going through the process of learning how to self-manage the disability.
But the record is full-time measured.
Full-time is measured as a 40-hour work week or an 80-hour for 2 weeks.
It's not by production as opposed to time spent?
A full-time employee at the board was required to produce an annual credit amount of 156 credits, full-time. Part-time would be on a sliding scale.
Were they also required, though, to sort of document that they worked 8 hours a day? I know when I was at the Justice Department, we sort of had to document that we worked 8 hours a day.
I think there's some measure that you have to log into the computer when you start and when you finish.
All right. So I don't mean to put words in Judge Randolph's mouth. I think it maybe is that a performance standard on the amount of credits that you do, or is that actually the definition of whether you're there full time? Is the amount of work you do a performance standard for full-time employees, or is it actually does that define whether you're full-time or part-time?
No, it's the performance requirement, annual performance requirement for full-time. It goes down as you go, as you reduce your hours.
And there were times when she was, while part-time, but still producing the 3 credits a week.
And so she actually exceeded the goal, which, by the way, the three credits a week is not an essential function of the job. It's an annual. And if it were an essential function of the job, nobody would be able to even take a vacation. Nobody would be able to be sick unexpectedly. It's admitted. It's a guide. So long as you meet it at the end, you've met your annual production. Lastly, Ms. Ward never requested as part of her accommodation.
Does that mean that it would take a year to decide whether she was performing at full time at home?
Successful performance, yes. It would be determined at the end of the year. However, whenever they start the year. I think her evaluations went from March to March. Finally, Ms. Ward never requested a reduction in her annual numbers as an accommodation. That's what they wanted her to do.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Alexander Shoaib for the appellee. Throughout the process in this case, the appellee did everything it was required to do under the law and ultimately did more by, in August of 2007, offering the appellant exactly what she was asking for.
Well, but that came almost after a letter saying, I'm getting ready to sue you. I mean, I don't think you need to rely on that August 7th letter.
Your Honor, I'm not relying on it, but I am pointing out that what we have here is an agency that acted in good faith the whole time, an agency that acted reasonably the whole time. She applied for a work-at-home position in April of 2007 because of a severe disability. The medical background and history that was before the agency at that time, which they could not ignore, which they had to take into consideration, was that she had used up all of her annual leave, all of her sick leave, all of her FMLA leave. She applied and
she
said...
Why is that relevant to whether an accommodation is going to work?
The relevance is this, Your Honor. The agency has the right to have expectation that the employee does their job, that they've performed their job, performed the essential functions of their job. If they have before them evidence that this is an employee who has a severe medical disability that she herself has said she has and is the reason she wants to work at home, they have a right to determine what is a reasonable accommodation and what reasonable accommodation will allow her to perform the precise, accommodation she required.
Did she not get a fully successful review just a couple months before this request?
The fully successful review, Your Honor, is...
She got a fully successful, yes. So you didn't have concerns about her doing her work.
Well, she herself let us know, Your Honor. Well, first of all, a couple of things. First of all, we can't ignore the fact that she had taken all of her leave. I mean, that was...
Why does that fact... I mean, you had an existing policy for FlexiPlace in place, and it was offered to employees who had these types of successful evaluations. And she just wanted to invoke the terms of the existing policy.
If you look at her request, the letter that she wrote in April, she doesn't say, I'm applying for a FlexiPlace. She says, I am looking to work at home for reasonable accommodation to accommodate my disability.
I understand, but you have a policy that says, hey, we have alternative workplace arrangements, including FlexiPlace, mm-hmm. working at home 5 days a week, and that can be an accommodation for a policy.
Right.
That's a reasonable one use of it is reasonable accommodations.
Well,
the
policy also says, Your Honor, that the deciding official, the official who makes a decision as to whether or not they're going to provide FlexiPlace, can look at all circumstances. It's not what they portray, that you ask for a FlexiPlace and automatically you work at home. And this was not that situation. This wasn't.
And the key circumstance you say is that she had used up a lot of leave.
It's not the key circumstance, Your Honor. The key circumstance is she made a request to work at home to take care of her disability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the circumstances that the agency had before it were several circumstances. She had taken lots of leave. She had had to work on a part-time basis for a while. She was having trouble, fulfilling her production. And
was she? Does the record show she wasn't meeting her credits?
The record shows. The record shows that she was having some issues with production. I'm not going to argue the point as to whether or not she got fully successful.
She got fully successful. Did she meet her credits by that March?
I believe she did. I believe she did.
So I guess I'm really, again, having trouble understanding. She said she didn't say she wanted to be at home to accommodate her disability. She said she wanted to be at home to work full time, but needed to be there because she had a disability.
All right. That's fair. But at the same time, it was a request for an accommodation of her disability.
Yes.
And her disability, based on what they had before, they had a right under the law to engage in an interactive process and that's what the law calls for, to determine what is the reasonable accommodation for this disability. It's not just you can say, I want to work at home with this medical background, and with her herself stating that the reason she wants to work at home is because of the medical issue.
Well, yeah, I don't think you surely get to make a decision, but I think the question is, what are the legitimate grounds for making a decision? A lot of times, two things can happen when you have a reasonable accommodation request. There maybe more than two. There can be a dispute about whether the person is disabled, but that wasn't in this case. There can be a dispute about, can we do what they're asking for? But that can't be an issue in this case because you had this existing program available to people with disabilities or without disabilities. There's no question that your workplace was fully amenable to having somebody work at home up to 5 days a week as long as they got the production done. And the third inquiry is, well, will this person be able to do the work?
Was
And she'd been doing it 2 months before you made this decision. She'd met all of her, she'd gotten fully satisfactory evaluation, met her credits. So I'm just trying to figure out why, how it was y'all ended up in this prolonged process with an awful lot of demands for information that had nothing to do with the job.
The question is, was she a qualified person with a disability? And she was not, because she could not perform the essential functions of her job with an accommodation.
Then why'd you offer it in August? What changed between June and August?
I'll tell you what changed. They're an interactive process, and in good faith. They ask for a request. The first letter that they get back is from Dr. Rose, who says the number of hours she can work will be determined. They will not say that she can work full time. They make another request. They get a letter from Dr. Fuiz in May saying that she has to take immediate no-pay leave of 15 to 25 hours. Right there in the face of the letter says, she can't work. She can't work full time. On the face of the letter says, she has to do 1 to 3 hours to treat her condition at a time. It doesn't say a day. It says at a time.
Right, so that's the information you had June 5th. What information changed between June 5th and August 8th?
She leaves. The agency is, they've been reasonable. They engaged in the interactive process. They've acted in good faith. They've asked for the information. She doesn't provide the information. They find out that she's quitting. She's claiming that she's been discharged. They make a decision in good faith. Let's try what she's asking for. In other words,
okay, but I'm glad that you all had processes and that your client thinks about these things and stays open-minded, but I think you just said absolutely nothing changed factually in the record about her ability to work between June and August.
Well,
and so
let's say that.
So if she could, you started this by saying we didn't know if she could do the job. She wasn't a qualified individual with a disability,
right.
But of course she was a qualified individual with a disability because in August, and nothing changed factually between June and August. So she must have been a qualified individual with a disability.
Look at the August 8th letter. Okay, the August letter says, we are willing to consider. They were going to do it on a trial basis. They liked her. They thought she was a good employee. They were at a loss as to why, when they asked for additional information, she abandoned the process and walked away, because that's not how the interactive process works under the law. She certainly wasn't entitled to get the position. But they decided.
They could have done that same thing in May or June, right?
Well,
but they did in August. There was nothing to stop them from doing that in May or June. They had the same information.
Okay. Well, they reacted to the situation as it happened. And again, I don't think they should be penalized for acting in what I think is excessive good faith, quite frankly.
Well, I thought she said, I'm going to retire, and then she said, hold off on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, no, immediately process it. And that was going on between June and August, right?
Mm-hmm. That's
so
correct.
is your position that the employer, and there is evidence that they didn't want to lose her. She was a good employee.
Exactly.
They were saying, well, maybe she's changed her mind about retiring. She's told us to delay, put it off. Now she said do it immediately for whatever OPM wanted. So that's one explanation for even though nothing changed in her condition, that you said, well, let's try it. But I think in view of the letter she wrote that said, I've been constructively discharged or I've been forced to retire or whatever,
mm-hmm.
That also, I think, colors that letter in August. In other words, you were on notice of what her legal, of what she thought her legal position was, that she had been constructively discharged.
Well, I think she did. There were some permutations in there where she retired and then decided she wanted to take permanent disability, and that all took place. And I'm not saying that it didn't, but I am saying that what they ultimately did, if you look at the way that the law calls for these cases to be, right, to proceed, it is an interactive process. And I don't think there's any question that she abandoned it.
She cut it short.
She cut it short. She jumped out. And the law says that if she jumps out, she can't be considered a qualified person with a disability. They acted in good faith. They
Where
asked
does
her
the law say that?
Pardon?
Where does the law say that?
I think it's in the statute.
This is in the Rehab Act, 29 CFR 1630.9. This is actually an addendum to the appellant's brief.
Which page are you on?
It's page 17 of their addendum. 29 CFR 1630.9, not making reasonable accommodation, D. An individual with a disability is not required to accept an accommodation, aid, service, opportunity, or benefit which such qualified individual chooses not to accept. And this is the key part. However, if such individual rejects a reasonable accommodation, aid, service, opportunity, or benefit...
Did you offer her a reasonable accommodation before she felt compelled to leave in June? Did she reject anything then?
Yes, we did. We offered her part-time. And part-time under the statute is a reasonable accommodation.
Part-time for someone who's asked for full-time?
Of course, it's still a reasonable accommodation. I mean, it is defined as a reasonable accommodation.
In this case, I mean, theoretically it could be for somebody. Is it a reasonable accommodation in this case for someone who wants full-time and can work full-time? Is it? I should think not.
In this case, under these circumstances, Your Honor, you're making a presumption that the medical evidence disputes. The medical evidence said the letter from
I'm
her
I'm trusting doctor, your August judgment.
I'm looking at the last piece of medical evidence that we have is a letter from Dr. Fweez. This is a second request he made for that says this woman needs immediate no-pay leave of 15 to 25 hours a week. That is by definition. The medical information we asked for, it says, show us you can do this job full-time at home, says, by the way, agency, she can't.
No, she said just do this while you're getting the doctor said let's do that while you're getting this other thing in place. While you're getting the work at home in place, is what the letter said.
Well, what else does he say? He says 1 to 3 hours at a time of treatment a day. Mm. I think the agency was not getting the medical evidence that showed that she was a reasonable a person with an accommodation that could be accommodated. And what they did on August 8th, again, I think what they did was they filled in the gaps in the interactive process. I think they could have very easily said goodbye, fine, you're walking away, you're not accommodated, you're not providing us with the information we need to make that determination. What they did instead was they said, let's give it a try, which they're entitled to do, as you pointed out, in the FlexPlace program. Let's give it a try. Come on board. Let's see if you can do this. We like you. You know, I think if you look at the medical documentation that they were presented with.
Can I just ask one more question because I know your time's up? The information they requested in the June 5th letter,
mm-hmm.
which of those requests were for information that were actually relevant to job performance?
Just hold this one moment.
Mm-hmm.
What did they say in the letter?
No, I'm just which... Oh, which sorry. Of those, I there's a lot of things said in the letter. I don't want to spend time going through it. Can you tell me which ones were truly job-related, essential functions of the job? Or seeking information about essential functions of the job.
Well, she's an attorney who has to write opinions. That's her job. She has to review files.
I know what her job is. I'm just,
and what they asked for was requested physician to confirm that she would be able to do the job with these restrictions, that she would be able to perform the job if she can only sit for short intervals at a time, that she has to apply these treatment routines whenever during the workday.
But you knew she could do all that because you said it's fine for you to work full-time in the office.
The office, at least they would know, they would be able to monitor the work that she was doing, that she was there for 8 hours a day and actually doing the job.
Okay, so the concern here was she just would slack off and not actually work.
The concern was that they have a right to expect an employee to do the job that they're supposed to do, which is to sit there and write opinions. And with the doctor's letters telling them that she needs this leave, that she can't sit for extended periods of time, that she has to take three-hour breaks at any given time during the day, they would have reason to be concerned. And not only that, Your Honor, they have a right to, under the policy, to determine what the reasonable accommodation is and to ask these questions. I think it's the indulgence for one moment.
Sorry, I apologize.
That's okay. They requested the information they needed to make the determination as to whether she could do this job at home. She didn't provide it. And I think that what they did in August was they didn't say, okay, you're right, work full time. They said, okay, you're good. You abandoned the process, but we're going to allow you to give this a try. And that's how the letter is written.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Does Ms. Kahn have any time left? All right, why don't you take a minute?
Thank you.
I keep harping on that she had used up all of her leave. The reason she used up all of her leave was because of the very working conditions that she was under at the job. That's what needed to be accommodated. Now, nothing changed in between the June letter and the August letter. The court is correct. But in terms of the June letter, she wrote to Cohn and Kramer's supervisor complaining about their behavior. She never got a response to that. And finally, Langan, she explained to them exactly how she could do her job at home. A plaintiff's own determination about their disability is significant in determining the accommodation. Also, Langan, the purpose of medical records in an accommodation context goes to the factual question of whether she alerted them of the severity of her disability. She did that. Dr. Fuse's letter did that. Once that is done, they were obligated to provide an accommodation. They don't get to determine the accommodation unless they offer a reasonable alternative under the law. Working part-time was not a reasonable alternative. Working full-time at the office with no accommodation in her working conditions was also not a reasonable an accommodation. They violated the Rehabilitation Act. Didn't really have a whole lot of time to talk to you about constructive discharge. I believe that on that claim, the court must look at it on a case-by-case basis. There were several aggravating factors here which led Ms. Ward to resign. There are many cases.
All right, that's not reply, so you're over your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Call in this case.